Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Is this the year that mortgage rates actually go up? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The guardians of interest rates are powerful, but if so, how come the cost of borrowing for a house or apartment didn't really go up in the year just ended? Even though the Federal Reserve engineered those short-term interest rate hikes, the cost of the 30-year fixed mortgage was lower at the end of 2017 compared to the beginning, same with a 15-year fixed mortgage. With the minutes of the Federal Reserve's last interest rate meeting to be publicized tomorrow, let's check in with economist David Kelly, chief global strategist at J.P. Morgan Funds.
Part of the issue is that it's not just the Federal Reserve that's going to be raising rates. I think when you see overseas central banks like the Bank of Japan and particularly the European Central Bank, they've got a booming economy in Europe, and I think that they will be getting a little tighter in monetary policy. And then, you know, as yields go up on cash accounts, people are going to demand some higher yields on long-term bonds. So I think rates will go up a bit this year. But, of course, that's the whole point. Why is the Federal Reserve raising short-term rates? It wants to apply a little pressure to the brakes here to stop the economy from overheating, to cool down asset prices a little bit. So this is the right thing to do, but it won't come without some pain. So if you're going to borrow money, best to borrow it early in the year.
I know, and if people hear this and rush out to try to find a place to live, borrow it for a new house, the thing is they got to find some stock that's for sale. I mean, we have a little inventory issue in America.
Well, that's right. We've got a very low inventory issue, but also we've got a very high credit rating issue. We require very high credit ratings for people to actually get a mortgage. So, you know, rates are low, but you've got two problems. One, can you get anybody to offer you that rate if your credit reports aren't perfect? And two, can you find a place to live? So this is not going to be like a return to the housing market of the 2000s. This is going to be lower housing starts, lower home sales, still relatively low mortgage rates. But it's still a good time to buy right now. You can still finance. If you can find a home, you can finance it pretty cheaply.
Starting the new year with David Kelly at J.P. Morgan Funds. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
Now, the argument was about longer-term mortgage rates. It's also true that a five-year adjustable mortgage a year ago was at 3.33%, and it's up near 3.47% now. North American cities have their applications in, all trying to win the competition to host the retailer Amazon's second headquarters, Amazon HQ2. As we continue to follow that story, a report today from the region that already has HQ number one, Seattle. Anna Boyko-Wyrock takes a look at one downstream success of having Amazon around, the restaurants.
Around 6 p.m., people flood out of South Lake Union. The neighborhood has become the heart of Amazon in Seattle. It's changed a lot since the company moved in almost a decade ago. Now it's full of gleaming office buildings and tech workers. But they're not spending their income on fancy dinners close to work. Like others on this street, Amazon employee Amber Lee is going home for the day.
It's not very convenient for me to like go out and eat here. Like I'd rather just go somewhere closer to my home.
The neighborhood empties out at night. And some restaurant owners found the market didn't meet their expectations. There's Vestal, which recently closed. The hearth here is cold, but the smoky smell lingers. Chef and owner Josh Henderson.
The worst thing is having an empty restaurant and then trying to keep your staff motivated and energized. It's a soul-sucking experience.
His takeout chicken shop and bar in South Lake Union also closed last year, joining other shuttered restaurants that served seafood, Brazilian steaks, and luxuries like foie gras mousse. Lunchtime is a different story. On neighborhood streets, workers with blue Amazon badges pass by with takeout boxes. Henderson says that's the demand.
Quick, under $15,
Three blocks up is Flying Fish. James Beard award-winning chef Chris Keff moved her restaurant here in 2010.
You could come in and get all the things you would get in a fancy restaurant without feeling like you're in a fancy restaurant.
But because Keff was just breaking even, she sold the restaurant. She says diners didn't show up as expected.
And that's the thing about when you build a whole new neighborhood with Class A office buildings is that the space is quite expensive to rent. So you depend on having business at most times of the day.
Now semi-retired, she manages all the food at Seattle University, a few miles away, including a lot of hash browns. Still, citywide, dining is a growth industry. Across Seattle, the number of restaurants grew 15% from 2010 to last year. In Seattle, I'm Anna Boyko-Wyrock for Marketplace.
Some parents spend more money per month than they do on their mortgage paying for their kids to play sports. Youth sports is a huge market, $15 billion a year by one estimate. Marketplace's Aaron Schrenk has a story now on what families hope to get out of their investment.
It's stuff like uniforms, lessons, equipment, and lots of travel that's now adding up to $15 billion, says Susan Eustace at Wintergreen Research.
It was only about $3 billion 5 years ago, so it's really come out of nowhere almost.
It's mostly club sports and traveling teams where parents are spending, and it's often hundreds of dollars every month, according to a TD Ameritrade survey. 20% spend more than $1,000. Sports business professor Mark Hyman at George Washington University says parents are making some tough financial choices.
And often choosing to support their kids' lives in sports at the expense of some things that you would think would be fundamental.
60% of the parents surveyed said they do worry that paying for sports could impact their ability to save for retirement. But most say they're hoping their investment will pay off with a scholarship. Hyman says with a lot of talented kids out there, the odds aren't great.
It just doesn't happen that often.
More concerning, Hyman says, overall, participation in youth sports is dropping, which means low-income kids are being left behind. I'm Aaron Schrenk for Marketplace.
And the pageant and very large business known as the Winter Olympics opens 5 weeks from tomorrow, February the 7th. It's in South Korea, and there have been concerns about what North Korea might do. But yesterday, the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said he was open to dialogue. And today, a senior South Korean official suggested high-level talks, perhaps at a meeting next week. The last time the two countries met like this was more than 2 years ago. Ads for the forthcoming Super Bowl and the Pyeongchang Olympics could earn Comcast's NBC an estimated $1.2 billion. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.